There is a piece on the Conversation website at the moment, which has as its headline, Cape Town Water Crisis, Seven Myths That Must Be Bust. And it is written by Dr. David Ulefied, or is that how you say your name, David? Well, I'm never entirely confident about names, because it was Lauren. If it was Lawrence, I'd say Lawrence Olivier. What do you say?
Nobody is ever entirely confident about my surname, and I can't even pronounce it. In the correct way. So there's no problem there. It's David Ulefied, first name English, second name Afrikaans.
Postdoctoral research fellow at the Global Change Institute of the University of the Witwatersrand. No problem pronouncing any of that. You say myth number one, which needs to be bust, is lack of preparedness. And if it is indeed a myth, then it is a myth that I must take quite a lot of responsibility for promulgating, because I have many times lambasted the city for, in my view, being underprepared for this.
Yeah, well, the reason I chose a title that was so black and white is because it seems like that side, the negative side, has been promulgated a lot. And I thought that the positive side hadn't really been given much airtime, and I thought the debate needed to be evened out a little bit.
And so, I mean, why is that a myth?
Because the city of Cape Town has prepared for it in many different ways. I mean, it depends what angle you want to take. They had, on the one side, the crisis was not predictable. The extreme drought was so unlikely it is almost impossible. Not only for a single year, but the fact that it went on from year to year. I mean, nobody could have predicted that. So then the argument would be, well, why didn't they prepare for that eventuality at all? I mean, if there's any chance of it happening, why weren't they completely prepared for any situation? And then it comes down to economics. You can't prepare 100%, you can't prepare your water system 100%, because for the argument's sake, 1,000 years that the drought hasn't occurred, you'd be wasting those funding. You wouldn't be able to justify using that funding to build a system that was 100% prepared. That's one of the angles.
Yeah, because I mean, what I took a lot of my criticism from was a rainfall summit which was held at UCT in May. The South African Weather Service, the CSIR, the Climate Systems Analysis Group at UCT, and a whole range of other organizations were there. And at the end, they said winter rainfall predictions are essentially useless for all sorts of reasons. So the SARS forecast that this might be a wetter winter than the average was essentially meaningless. And because of that, it was my view that the city needed to prepare a response for the worst case scenario, which they didn't do. They're only responding to the worst case scenario, and we can discuss how energetically and efficiently they're doing that once that worst case scenario became a stark daily reality.
The difficulty is in defining what a worst case scenario is. I mean, things are still not as bad as they could ever be. Arguably, the rain could never fall again in Cape Town. And then you'd say, how could the city have not prepared for that scenario? And it becomes difficult when you start talking in retrospect about what they ought to have done.
Well, I was saying it in May, and I was saying it in September last year. But anyway, myth number two is lack of enforcement. Again, that's a criticism that is often heard, that the city doesn't do enough to crack down on offenders against the level 3A, 3B, 4A, 4B, and now level 5 water restrictions.
Yes. I mean, there's still 55,000 households who aren't achieving the 87 litres per person per day mark, and the question is how to force. I mean, do you want to force them? That's one question. How much pressure are you allowed to apply, and so on? And so, probably there will always be households that are using water profligately, and I suppose the latest is to physically force water down by just not supplying enough water for people to use more, which requires installing water management devices. So that's why I'm saying it's a myth, because if you look at other examples, other countries that have been hailed as excellent in reducing their water consumption, Cape Town has reduced their water consumption by the same percentages and volumetrically even more than in other countries.
Look, I mean, you know, Patricia de Lille is using every opportunity over the last couple of weeks to mention that we've come down from 1.1 billion litres of water a day on average to the figure of the previous week, which was just over 600 million litres a day. But our target is 500 million litres a day, and we haven't got close to that in the close to 4 months that that has been our target, which suggests that the city should be doing something else. What that something else should be, I'm not entirely sure, but it seems that we've kind of somehow reached the limit of the water savings, which are probable because we've stuck in a narrow band for very nearly 4 months.
Yeah, it's a good question what the city should be doing, because it would be something that has never been done before. That's something that hasn't even been thought of before. And the only solution they have so far is to just install more water management devices and also to restrict the flow of water to certain areas, so that once the area is using X amount of water, it's simply there's simply not enough pressure to come out the taps. And Sydney did the same thing. So yeah, I mean, this is such a dramatic and unusual situation that the solutions are going to have to be something that's completely original.
Myth number three, unfair targeting. This myth has it that water saving campaign unfairly targets the residential sector. That is, I agree, that's a myth. I've spoken out often and given the figures about how much water is used by the residential sector versus retail versus industry versus informal settlements and so on. Myth number four, lots of water is being lost to leaks. Again, I've quoted the city's figures on that. We do very, very well as a city in terms of international standards in the amount of water we lose to leaks. But myth number five, desalination plants are the answer. It is part of the augmentation strategy which the city is using, and they are looking to get somewhere close to 50% of the augmented water supply through something like between 8 and 12 pilot desalination plants. But you reckon desal plants are not the answer?
let me balance that perspective a little bit. I chose that title purposefully to be dramatic, and what I meant by it was that at the beginning of this crisis, immediately the response from the public was, let's build a desalination plant and all our problems will go away. We'll be able to continue our lives as business as usual. I'm coming against that because desalination plants alone are not the answer. Water supply, water demand management is also part of the answer. And so it was just simply to balance those two perspectives and to provide a bit more of a nuanced perspective on the issue.
Yeah. So, and then myth number six, day zero is inevitable. It's not inevitable, but it is scarily probable, surely, David, because, you know, if we continue to use water at 600 million litres a day, and I doubt that we will, I'm reasonably confident that it is going to go up. We're staring what appears to be a very hot and very windy summer in the face, and there's going to be significant evaporation that can't be prevented, it can't be diminished, and we run out of water late March, early April, and the city so far has commissioned 7 million litres of augmentation through aquifer extraction near Atlantis and 2 million litres of spring water diversion into the Maltino Reservoir, where it'll be chlorinated and then put back into the potable water system. That is so far short of the extra that we need, and there seem to be, I don't know, very long delays in getting these augmentation schemes up and running.
Yeah, that is the sad truth. Obviously, the city's augmentation schemes are planning to bring maximum 240 million litres a day online, minimum 150 million litres, and that'll be from December 2017, so very soon, and then until May 2018. So this is something that's evolving. Water supplies are increasingly coming online. On the other hand, like you said about the usage going up, our usage as Catonians, on the one hand, it goes up in the summer because we use our swimming pools and we water our gardens. I mean, historically, hopefully that isn't going to happen this year. And on the other hand, usage sometimes also goes up when it rains because people drop their guard. So there's in two different scenarios, both could create usage. And by the same logic, usage could go down because in those same two scenarios, because in the extremely hot and dry weather, people are more aware of the drought. It just feels more tangible, and they see more reason for having to save water. I hope usage is going to keep going down over the summer. There is no need to use water in the swimming pool and the garden. Just let the garden die, let indigenous plants survive, and so on. So hopefully by this summer, there's been enough of an experience, and research shows that experience does make people respond better in these situations to saving water. Hopefully that will occur.
Hopefully. Yeah, there's a lot of hope around. But thank you. And if you'd like to have a sort of closer look at the seven myths that must be bust, it is on the Conversation website. Dr. David Willefield, thanks for chatting to us. Postdoctoral research fellow at the Global Change Institute at the University of the Witwatersrand.